This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. I'm in Jefferson City this week to cover a pivotal special session. And later in the show, we'll hear from Democratic House Minority Leader Ashley Aune on President Donald Trump's push to redraw the state's congressional lines, and Republican Secretary of State Denny Hoskins on why he supports making it harder for initiative petition proposals to pass. First, let me be direct with you. There isn't a whole lot of suspense about what's going to happen over the next week. Republicans have the numbers to achieve Governor Mike Kehoe's goal of converting Democratic Congressman Emanuel Cleaver's Kansas City-based 5th District into a GOP-leaning seat. And if they want, they could give Missouri voters the opportunity to make it extraordinarily difficult to enact an initiative petition by requiring passage in 8 out of 8 congressional districts and a statewide vote. But for Benito Ledesma, there's more at stake inside the state capitol than just whether Republicans can pull together to pass bills. Instead, the Maplewood resident says it's about how a push to erode Democratic norms is seeping into the show-me state.
How can it happen here in Missouri? We're supposed to have smart people here, and it hurts my heart.
Show me what democracy looks like!
Ledesma joined hundreds of people earlier this week in Clayton Shaw Park to protest the special session, which is expected to last into next week. Attendees here not only saw Kehoe's redistricting and initiative push as a slap in the face to Missouri voters, but as Florissant resident Sharon Hillier noted, an admission from Republicans that their leadership in Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City is unpopular.
Certainly. I think they're very afraid. I think that, like, lots of powerful people with money are trying to cover up a lot of bad things. So, you know, I think this is their only angle.
The redistricting push is not happening in a vacuum. Trump is pressuring Republican states like Missouri, Texas, Indiana, and Florida to redraw their congressional lines ahead of the 2026 elections. The president's party usually does poorly in these contests, and the GOP holds a perilously small majority in the U.S. House. Kehoe himself acknowledged Trump's influence in a social media video his office released after calling the special session.
I appreciate President Donald Trump for raising the level of conversation on this matter, because his leadership on this nationally underscores just how important this moment is for Missouri.
Others feel this is about more than national pressures, but how Missouri Republicans react to actions contrary to their policy agenda. The initiative petition curbs come after the legislature wiped out voter-approved sick leave requirements and put a measure on the 2026 ballot aimed at repealing abortion rights protections Missourians backed less than a year ago. St. Louis County resident Ariana Kimborough worked on Proposition A, a 2024 initiative that boosted the minimum wage and mandated earned sick leave.
I don't like the idea that after taking away our paid sick leave and, you know, higher minimum wage, they're also now trying to take away our political freedom and our ability to be seen and represented for what we all want as people, what we all really feel.
Some Missouri Republicans have been very upfront about how the redistricting proposal is about preventing Democrats from taking over the House next year. Others have pointed at Illinois for creating a map that boosted Democratic prospects, though Illinois Democrats drew up that plan right after the census and didn't do it in the middle of the decade at the behest of a president. But Republican State Representative Richard West offers up another rationale. The Wentzville Republican told me in his Jefferson City office that Missourians prefer Republicans over Democrats across the board. And he added that an arrangement that makes it more difficult for Democrats to win in the state's 5th district, which West refers to here as a 7-to-1 map, reflects that reality.
If you look at our state, the way we've been voting in the last few years, I think we've become a more Republican state. I'm not going to say not more conservative, but a more Republican state. There's a difference. And I think that a 7-1 map best represents the Missouri voter at this point in time.
Now, detractors of the redistricting plan would strongly disagree with West here, pointing to the fact that a map that carves out only one safe Democratic seat doesn't reflect a state where roughly 40% of the voting base backs Democrats. They've also contended that redrawing Missouri's congressional lines in the middle of the decade is illegal and unconstitutional, though judges will ultimately make that determination in the months ahead. But West is indisputably correct that Republicans have gained enormous amounts of ground in nearly a decade since Trump came on the political scene. The GOP holds every statewide office and commanding majorities in the legislature. Democratic candidates have routinely gotten around 20% of the vote in rural counties. And they've also gotten blown out in Missouri's traditional battleground areas like Jefferson, Buchanan, Lincoln, and Cass counties. Republican State Representative Bill Hardwick of Pulaski County says he supports a map that would make it harder for Cleaver to win re-election because his voters support Trump and they want Republicans to retain control of the U.S. House.
I think that partisan gerrymandering is not a threat to the Republic. I think it's what's been happening since the Republic was founded, essentially. I don't necessarily like that's not what I think is ideal. I just think that it's hyperbolic to say that partisan gerrymandering is like the end of America.
So what happens next? As I mentioned on the outset, legislators will likely send the new congressional map to Kehoe at the end of next week. The proposal to restrict initiative petitions has a less certain future, though it's likely that something to make it harder to enact initiative petitions will go before voters next year. As seen this week, Democrats don't have a lot of power to stop Republicans. For instance, State Representative Elizabeth Fuchs unsuccessfully tried to call a point of order on Wednesday about how the House lacked a quorum to begin a special session. The St. Louis Democrat pointed out that her caucus cannot emulate their counterparts in Texas by refusing to show up.
We want as many people here under the dome as possible to make it difficult for them to walk past their constituents without seeing their faces as they take away their rights to their votes.
And even if Republicans are successful legislatively, State Representative Kemp Strickler pointed out the new map may backfire. By splitting heavily Democratic Kansas City into three districts, Democrats not only have a chance to keep the 5th district from flipping, but also potentially capture the nearby 4th district that Republican Representative Mark Alford represents.
It's an interesting risk from the standpoint of the Republicans, and I certainly hope that karma catches up with them.
If Republicans do backslide in 2026, it will be a major change since Trump was elected president in 2016. Democratic U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill lost her seat in 2018, a year which Democrats retook the House. Backlash over Trump's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic did not trickle down to statewide contests in 2020. And the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade did little to change the political composition of the Missouri legislature in 2022 or 2024. While acknowledging that Democrats have been hopeful for political change before, Brentwood resident Laura Gordon says the special session could be a turning point for progressive-minded Missourians.
I would not be involved if I wasn't guilty of some wishful thinking. I believe that absolutely progressives are going to have to find their voice to stand up to the Republicans who are trying to redistrict, trying to take away initiative petition. I hope this is what turns the tide, but at the end of the day, if it doesn't, I know I'll keep fighting and a lot of us will keep fighting until we do stop them.
When we return, we'll talk with Democratic House Minority Leader Ashley Awney about the daunting challenge for her caucus during this special session. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri Republicans explicitly rejected a plan just 3 years ago that converted Democratic Congressman Emanuel Cleaver's Kansas City-based 5th District into a GOP-leaning seat. But Democrats expect those GOP lawmakers to change their minds next week when the map that seeks to oust Cleaver goes to the floor. President Donald Trump and his staff have been pressuring Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe and Republican lawmakers to engage in mid-decade redistricting ahead of next year's midterm elections. But State Representative Richard West says fear of Trump's wrath isn't the main motivating factor why he sees his Republican colleagues switching sides. West, a Wentzville Republican and the chairman of a special House redistricting committee, says the fact that Kehoe strongly supports what's known as a 7-to-1 map is playing a major role in changing the tide.
My fellow colleagues will change their vote because we have new leadership in the state of Missouri. And there's a big difference. Our last leadership did not want the 7-1 for whatever reasons that he had. Our new leadership does want the 7-1. And I believe that leadership will trickle down to the members of the House and eventually the Senate, and a lot of those votes will change.
But it's fair to say that House Minority Leader Ashley Aune doesn't find that type of argument convincing. The Kansas City Democrat says this special session is proof that Missouri Republicans are cowardly hypocrites who fold under pressure from the GOP president. I spoke with Aune earlier this week in her office at the Missouri State Capitol about how Democrats plan to respond to the remapping plan and whether it could actually boost her party's prospects in the Kansas City area. I want to start off with a listener question from our favorite place for pseudonyms, Reddit. Aaron G0202 asks, do Missouri Democrats have any chance in blocking this being the redistricting map? They were still in the minority of a supermajority government last time around.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so I think that the answer is twofold. The short answer is no. We don't have any mechanisms to fight this the way Texas did. The supermajority in Missouri means that they don't need us to conduct business. They don't need us to establish a quorum. In fact, I've been joking with people that they'd probably prefer it if we left. It would make their jobs easier. They'd be able to go quietly into the good night. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is you're right. In 2022, a 7-1 map was proposed, and it was roundly rejected by most Republicans. In fact, there were only 23 members, I believe, at the time that voted in favor of it. So the question I ask, and the question is the same question you've asked, dear Redditor, which is that what's changed, right? If they didn't vote for it in 2022, why are they going to vote for it now? Well, the answer is Trump. Trump came calling. That's what changed.
Why do you think the Republicans are so fearful of Trump and his staff on this?
Honestly, I think that, you know, Trump has been really effective at threatening people. He was directly threatening lawmakers in Indiana over redistricting. And I think that folks are just afraid that they're going to lose their seats. And, you know, I think that that is, for whatever reason, Missouri Republicans are terrified of losing their grip on power. And they are just far too willing to capitulate to the requests of the federal government on this one.
You've mentioned to me in August that you fully expect Republicans who voted against going after Representative Emanuel Cleaver in 2022 to fall in line because of pressure from Trump and his staff. First of all, that's correct, right?
That's correct.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because that Trump is really effective, frankly, at wielding that authoritarian power. I mean, he's a wannabe dictator. Let's start there. And so what he wants is for folks around the country to do his bidding. And he has a chokehold on this Republican Party. I mean, he seems to be running things at every single level. It seems to be flying in the face of, having three branches of government to hold each branch accountable. You know, where is that at in this government? There is none, because Congress is capitulating to the president. State legislatures and governors are capitulating to the president. It's pretty devastating for our democracy.
Interestingly, former Missouri State Senator and former State Representative Eric Burleson, who is now a member of Congress, theorized that a lot of Republicans voted against what's known as a 7-to-1 map in 2022. And for our listeners, we refer to a 7-to-1 map. It's a map where Cleaver's 5th District, which is currently very Democratic, is converted into a Republican-leaning seat. They told me they didn't support that because they didn't want to give then state senators Bill Eigel or Bob Onder a political win. And it had really nothing to do with strong convictions against going after Congressman Cleaver. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that it's not surprising to hear that the motivation was purely political and that their calculations weren't what's best for my constituents, what's best for the people of Missouri. You know, disappointing but not shocking. And honestly, I don't know that what the fight that we're in right now is about Cleaver necessarily, or that's not what it is about for the folks here in Missouri. Now, I will say, I think that it's important to speak to the larger trend of this. If you look across the country at the congressional districts being threatened by Trump's new maps, if Trump is successful, I believe that it's like half of the Congressional Black Caucus, their representation is being threatened in Congress. And I think that is something that we should be paying attention to. The fact that Black folks are already underrepresented in Congress, and this is a huge threat to their representation at the congressional level.
But one of the downsides of this for Democrats is you can't argue that this is a Voting Rights Act violation because Cleaver doesn't represent a majority African-American district. In fact, when people assume that he does, he frankly gets a little offended by that because it makes it seem that a Black congressman can only get elected if the majority of his population is Black. And it is not. It has never been. Can you talk about that? Because I think people assume that that's going to be the legal challenge on this. And we'll talk more about that later. But it's not going to be VRA that ends up knocking down this map.
That's correct. My understanding is that the 5th Congressional District, because it's not a majority-minority district, is not protected under the Voting Rights Act the same way as our 1st Congressional District is, which is why Trump came in and asked for a 7-1 map and not an 8-0 map, because I think that his administration understood that the legal challenges based on the VRA were likely too insurmountable. There are going to be legal challenges. There are constitutional challenges to what's happening, but they will not be around the Voting Rights Act.
I've heard a lot of rationalizations for why Republicans are going along with this, and some have been pretty honest that they want to just prevent the Democrats from taking over the U.S. House. But I read a quote from your colleague, State Representative Scott Cupps of Shelnob, and he says they're doing this because states like Illinois and California suppressed Republican representation in 2021. Now, I am not validating that point of view, but when this gets to the floor, I expect that to be heard over and over again. What's going to be your response?
Yeah, well, you know, my response individually as a lawmaker is that I really hate how hyperpartisan our redistricting has become across the country. I think that this hyperpartisanship is so ingrained in our culture now, and we've built really terrible incentives around map making. Every 10 years we have a census, and that gives states a new opportunity to draw lines that are best representative of their states. But when we allow hyperpartisanship to take over on either side of the aisle, I think it's bad. You know, I don't think that gerrymandered districts in Illinois are any better or worse than gerrymandered districts in Texas or Missouri. I think that it's all bad. And I would love to see a federal effort to make this process more fair and nonpartisan across the board.
Do you think political parties actually want fair redistricting? Because it seems that Democrats in GOP-dominated states and Republicans in Democratic states want commissions, and they want to try to find a way to have more representation. And you could make an argument that that's artificially increasing representation more than what voters actually want. What do you think about that?
You know, I think that, you know, a thoughtfully created bipartisan or nonpartisan commission or task force or, you know, whatever the state decides to do, I think that if it's well crafted, well thought out, and well executed, I think it really can create fair maps. I think that there is actual opportunity there, and I think that, you know, it may be hard to say because we all approach life through our lens, and sometimes that lens is hyperpartisan, right? But I do think that it's important to keep an eye on how do we make this process more fair.
St. Louis resident Jess Dawes asks, as far as I understand it, redistricting mid-decade is illegal according to the Missouri state constitution. How are Missouri legislators planning to get away with breaking state law by redistricting before the next census? So I mentioned we were going to talk about this point. Can you explain why you think this redistricting special session is not lawful?
Well, there are a few reasons. You know, when you look at what the Missouri Constitution says about drawing new maps, about redistricting, it does say that, you know, a new map shall be drawn, you know, with the new census data or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. But, you know, many people read that as to say, you know, it does not explicitly say that you can redistrict more than once, and therefore our Constitution does not allow for this. That will be the main legal challenge. So I think that this has been unlawful from the beginning, and I think that there are a lot of ways in which that it is.
I've read the constitutional amendment in question, and it doesn't explicitly prohibit mid-decade redistricting. It doesn't mention it at all. So have you seen the film Air Bud?
I have not.
Okay, so there's a part in Air Bud where somebody objects to Air Bud playing basketball, and the referee looks in the rule book and says, there's no rule that says a dog can't play basketball. And I kid you not, that could be the reason why this map is upheld, because there's no explicit prohibition on this. So could the Air Bud rule lead to this congressional map being upheld in court?
I mean, it certainly could. You know, I think that that's just one of those cases where it's like when you look at, you know, the rules of a place and you think that, wow, that's a really specific rule. What did someone do wrong to make that get into the rule book, right? It's one of those situations. Like, you don't know it's a problem until someone challenges it. And now we have to work through that challenge. And, yeah, I guess the Air Bud rule could apply, Jason.
We are talking with House Minority Leader Ashley Awney. She's a Democrat from the Platte County part of Kansas City. We got an intriguing question from Pacific resident Sky Bear. I think any further gerrymandering in Missouri will likely create more competitive districts than currently exist. So what Mr. Bear is referring to is the reason why Republicans did not pursue a 7-to-1 map in 2022, and that's because putting large amounts of Democratic voters in the 4th and 6th districts could make those two districts more competitive and possibly vulnerable for Democratic takeovers in really bad Republican years. What is your thought about that? Because I think that a lot of Kansas City Democrats see that as a possibility while not saying, hey, Republicans, let's do this so you can basically have your plan backfire on itself.
Right. Well, you know, I will say that I have actually been one of the people who's been happy to remind the Republicans that I do think that they may be about to dummy mander themselves into a 5-3 map. And I think that that is exactly something that they need to be watching out for. You know, frankly, I have not yet seen the demographic breakdown of this map that Trump has proposed.
I was just going to ask you that because I was looking at the new 5th district, and while it looks really Republican with the eye test, I actually think it's could be a 50-50 district at best during a bad Republican year, maybe even below that. But
right,
continue.
And 2026 could be a terrible year for the Republicans. It's a midterm year, and I think that's entirely the point of redistricting across the country the way Trump is because he's afraid he's going to lose. And so, yeah, if we run the right candidates, if we have the right messaging, and we are out there talking to Missourians about what kind of representation they deserve in Congress, absolutely, this could backfire on the Republicans. It is not out of the question.
There's been a lot of reaction to the special session from elected Republicans and Democrats, but I think the most interesting one I've seen is from your congressman, Sam Graves of Tarkio. Quote, redistricting is up to the state legislature and the governor. I will wait and see what they decide to do. Now, I want to put a little bit of context on this very bland statement, but that actually struck me as not bland at all. Congressman Graves publicly opposed the 7-to-1 map in 2022. Now, some of that may stem from the fact that Graves and Cleaver are close friends, but I think he was also a believer that this could backfire. But I don't get a sense that, like, that sort of comment is really going to resonate with any Republicans, even maybe in the 6th district. What's your reaction to your congressman's comment?
Honestly, I think it's just indicative of the lack of political courage across the Republican Party right now. You know, I mean, to be as close as you are with a colleague as Congressman Graves and Congressman Cleaver are, as closely as they've worked together to deliver really impactful projects and dollars to our region, you know, and to put out such a milquetoast comment like that, it's deeply disappointing, but not, again, not surprising, because that's exactly the kind of cowardice we've seen from the Republicans.
So I'm assuming you've been one of the people who have argued that splitting up Kansas City into three districts will dilute the voice of the state's largest city. But by the way, I need to point this out. It already was divided because Platte County has always been in Graves' district. But like this would divide it further. I'm being a bit pedantic here, but that's one of your arguments, correct? And if so, why?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we have benefited from the fact that Sam Graves and Emanuel Cleaver work well together. And I think that that's why Kansas City being divided into two districts has historically been successful and it hasn't been a problem. But when we're talking about dividing it into three separate districts, which means we are going to A, lose the diversity in that coalition, likely, and B, you know, bring white rural representation, trying and asking those people to fight for the projects that Kansas City is most passionate about and that Kansas City needs to grow and be better at a time when we know that Republicans' entire goal is to allow government to fail, especially in blue cities, and then point to those failures as being the result of blue leadership.
So I asked that question because we got a really interesting comment from former Missouri Children's Division Director Daryl Missy, who used to be a judge in Jefferson County. They don't just play partisan games with this. They also play regional games. Though it is full of Republicans, they keep splitting Jefferson County in half in a way that makes no sense other than that there be no Jefferson Countyan ever getting elected to Congress. If they redraw the lines, I dare them to put Jefferson County in one congressional district. I don't think they'll ever do it, and they're not doing it in this map. So do you think these kind of sentiments where there are Republican areas that are being split, because there are, Jefferson County isn't the only one, I think Webster is still split and others, do you think that may influence how some of your Republican colleagues vote on this? Or do you think that's not going to be a determinative factor about whether they buck the president on this one?
I think that's a great question. And honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think that the political will right now of my Republican colleagues is pretty low. I don't think that a lot of them are really excited about this endeavor. But I do think that they're going about it begrudgingly. So, you know, I mean, if there are regional reasons or even congressional pressure from their congressman or even someone who wants to be a congressman, you know, I could see that affecting votes. But we'll see.
That was House Minority Leader Ashley Awney, a Democrat from Kansas City, talking with me about how her fellow Democrats plan to push back against a redistricting plan aimed at ousting Democratic Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll talk with Republican Secretary of State Denny Hoskins about why he supports efforts to curtail the initiative petition process. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe didn't just call lawmakers back to Jefferson City to redraw the state's congressional lines. He's also urging lawmakers to make monumental changes to Missouri's initiative petition system. And while that might seem like hyperbolic adjectives, it's not that far from the truth. Under the current system, groups who gather enough signatures to get a proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot need a simple statewide majority for passage. But Kehoe's proposal would drastically raise the bar. For some proposed constitutional amendments and some statutory ballot items to be enacted. Not only would a measure need a statewide vote, but it would also have to pass in all 8 congressional districts. As it stands, this would not apply to proposed constitutional amendments or proposed statutory ballot items that originate from the legislature. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Doug Beck of Afton said earlier this week that the proposal, which will need voter approval in 2026, would decimate the ballot initiative process.
That is impossible. That would never happen. Nobody would ever set out to do that. That won't happen. So it would take your voice away completely. You know, they're trying to tell you they're keeping you out of state interest, blah, blah, blah. They're taking away your voice completely because they don't like your ideas. But they keep getting elected. They don't like your ideas. And what are your ideas doing? You're always trying to help somebody.
Still, the idea received strong support from Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins, who pushed for restrictions on the initiative petition process when he was a member of the Missouri Senate. I spoke with Hoskins on Wednesday about why he feels this plan that Kehoe is supporting will fare well at the ballot box. Here's my conversation with Secretary of State Denny Hoskins. Secretary Hoskins, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having me.
Why do you support this initiative petition overhaul proposal that Governor Kehoe unveiled last week? And why do you think it will find favor with Missouri voters?
Well, I've always said when I was a state representative or state senator, it needs to be a little bit harder to put something in the Missouri Constitution. We have bingo in the Missouri Constitution. And right now, in my opinion, we have a lot of out-of-state special interest groups that come in and spend millions and millions of dollars to put something on the ballot that really sound good on a 30-second radio ad or 30-second TV spot, but in my opinion, don't reflect the true value of Missourians.
Republicans have sought to make it harder to approve constitutional amendments for well over a decade. The first iteration of this idea was raising the percentage threshold from a simple majority to anywhere from 57% to 60%. Then they backed what was known as the concurrent majority plan that required an amendment to pass with a simple majority and in 5 out of 8 congressional districts. This proposal requires a simple majority and passage in all congressional districts. Why have these proposals escalated so drastically in terms of their restrictiveness?
Well, I think the Missouri Constitution is almost a sacred document, and it's not something that just should be changed willy-nilly based on the political whims, especially of outside special interest groups. And so I do think that it needs to be harder to put something in the Missouri Constitution. And whether it's concurrent majority, whether it's a majority of all 8 congressional districts plus statewide, whether it's a higher percentage, there's lots of ideas that have been floated out there. You know, as a state senator, obviously I had my own opinion of what that should be, but as the chief elected official now in the state of Missouri, as Secretary of State, I just think that something needs to be passed, and I have confidence in our legislature that they will be able to pass something in accordance with Governor Kehoe's special session call.
From your understanding, because I don't have the details of the proposal in front of me, but would constitutional amendments that originate from the legislature also need to pass in 8 out of 8 congressional districts, or would it still be a simple majority?
I think that the legislature would require that as well. Now, I know special session starts on Wednesday, and I've not seen the bills yet, but my understanding is that any of those, whether it's proposed by the legislature to be a constitutional amendment or whether it's proposed through the initial petition process, would require both have the same requirements.
So you would be supportive of the requirements being the same, whether it be for the legislature or the initiative petition process?
Yes, I would be supportive of them both being the same.
So here is the danger for that. Let's just say that voters approve this idea, but they do not approve a measure to repeal what's known as Amendment 3, which enshrined abortion rights protections in the Constitution in 2024. If it requires 8 out of 8 congressional districts to pass a constitutional amendment, in that scenario, have Missouri Republicans accidentally legalized abortion basically forever?
I don't think so. And again, I'm not an attorney. So if the legislature does pass this initiative petition process, it will have to go to the voters. and the voters should be on that ballot in the year of 2026. And so I know that there's some different opinions out there from our legal scholars whether or not that would affect if the initial petition process was put on the ballot in 2026, how that would affect other things in 2026 that were on the ballot, if those would have to comply with that, or if that would be under the next election in 2028.
Detractors of this proposal have said that if voters end up approving it, it will be basically impossible to approve a new constitutional amendment because just one congressional district could vote it down by like one or two votes, even if the rest of the state votes it by a landslide. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think, again, I think it needs to be harder to put something in the Missouri Constitution. And with the proposal that is set to be put forward in the governor's special session, that's exactly what this does. And so to put something in the Missouri Constitution, it would take an overwhelming support, not by just 5 out of the 8 congressional districts, or not just run up the vote totals in rural Missouri, where our two biggest cities, Kansas City and St. Louis, are against it, or vice versa, where Kansas City and St. Louis are definitely for something, and the rest of the state of Missouri is against it. So I think that I fully support the concept of this process about making it harder to put something in the Constitution, and I think making sure that 8 out of 8 congressional districts plus an overall majority of Missourians does exactly that.
So my understanding would be that if this goes to voters, it would only need a majority to pass, right?
Yes, that is true.
Do you understand the irony that you're substantially increasing the bar to pass constitutional amendments, but you're not requiring it to go into effect by that same standard?
Yeah, I know that there is some irony with that, but we are operating and the legislature is operating under current Missouri state law. And so under current Missouri state law, I mean, I think this just highlights the some of the problems that we've seen where something can pass with 50% plus one vote. And depending on voter turnout, depending on how much out-of-state money is coming in to influence the vote based on some fancy 30-second radio ad or 30-second TV spot, I think that this definitely highlights what's wrong in the system here in the state of Missouri. And so hopefully this will pass. The initial petition revised will pass, and then it will be harder to put something in the Missouri Constitution.
You've mentioned out-of-state money numerous times, and I
yes.
think that's a reference to Amendment 3, the Abortion Rights Initiative, which did absolutely get a lot of out-of-state money. I noticed there's not a lot of Republicans making that argument about sports betting. Has there been sort of a selective outrage over out-of-state money based on whether the Republicans in particular like or dislike a ballot initiative?
Well, yeah, probably most certainly. Obviously, if it's something that Democrats like, then they want to make sure that it passes. And if it's something that Republicans like, they will make sure that they support it, Republicans support it, and it passes. So there is obviously there's some selective, I guess, memory as far as when it comes to other issues that have made it in the past. I mean, but you know, overall, we're operating in the system that we have right now.
We're talking with Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins about the proposed overhaul of part of Missouri's initiative petition process. So we've spent a lot of time talking about what would be required to pass a constitutional amendment, but I do want to go over the other points that Governor Kehoe laid out when he announced the special session, because there are other things in this proposal that I think are very important. The first that I would like to talk about is a measure that would establish a criminal election offense for fraudulently signing or gathering signatures for a statewide ballot measure. What exactly does that mean, and how would somebody fraudulently sign a petition or fraudulently gather signatures?
Well, it's been documented in the past, and obviously about fraudulent signatures, or someone basically going through the phone book and just signing names because they're paid on a per-name basis. And so we want to strengthen that part of the election process and make sure that, hey, anybody that cheats as far as trying to put something on the ballot and gather signatures is prosecuted the full extent of the law. And so I'm very passionate about that part too. Then if you're gathering signatures, you need to be actually gathering signatures, not just looking on the internet and signing people's names and then turning those in.
Is that not already illegal though? I feel like that has to already be illegal under state law.
It is illegal, and from my understanding, and again, I'm not seeing the final product or the final bill that's going to be filed today, but my understanding is there might be some increased penalties when people do that.
So I just want to be clear, though. If, for say, you sign a petition and you're not registered to vote and you didn't know that you had to be registered to vote in order to sign a petition, that would not constitute signature fraud based off your thought process about this. Because that could happen a lot. And I think the best punishment for that is just not to count that signature, not to charge somebody with a crime or anything like that.
I would totally agree. I mean, yes, if you're not registered to vote or maybe you moved from Illinois to Missouri or Kansas to Missouri and you sign a petition or something like that. No, in my opinion, you should not be charged with a crime because you're not a registered voter of this state.
One other part of this initiative is a ban on foreign nationals from contributing to committees for or against a statewide ballot measure. Isn't it already illegal for someone who doesn't live in the United States to contribute to elections in Missouri?
Actually, it's not. It is as far as elections and election candidates, but different initiative petitions and ballot measures that are on the ballot, it's currently not illegal to do that. And that's why we saw a lot of money from, I believe, a Swiss billionaire come in that was pro-Amendment 3, but currently it is not against the law here in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, you're referring to how that aforementioned Swiss billionaire, whose name I do not remember at this moment, there was an article about how he contributed to what's known, I believe, as the 1630 Fund. The problem, though, with actually enforcing this is the 1630 Fund is a 501c4 politically active nonprofit. They don't have to disclose their donors. And I remember, I have a long memory of Republicans, even Republicans that did not like then-Governor Eric Greitens, vigorously defending the right of politically active nonprofits to keep their donors secret. So how exactly is this going to be enforced if these nonprofit groups don't have to ever disclose their donors and some foreign national may donate to one of these entities?
Yeah, I'm not saying that it'd be easy to enforce, but I think our attorney general would have something to say about that, whether it's our current attorney general, Andrew Bailey, or our new attorney general here in about a week of Catherine Hanaway. I'm sure that this would be something that goes through their office and they decide whether or not they have enough evidence to prosecute.
The next part of this proposal is that before a statewide ballot measure is certified for signatures to be gathered, there has to be an opportunity for public comment. How long would this public comment period be, or how long would you want it to be? And could someone like you just keep it open indefinitely for initiative petitions that you don't personally like?
Well, that would not be the intent, is for me to keep it open for initiative petitions that I don't like. But I think a minimum of 30 days and probably a maximum of 90 days.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that people have the opportunity to comment on an initiative petition. And something that does not go through the legislature, there's not a lot of opportunities for public comment in a formal setting. And so most certainly anything that helps with transparency as far as what exactly that initiative petition is going to do, how it's going to affect everyday Missourians, how it's going to affect our lives, how it's going to affect our kids' lives, our grandkids' lives, I fully support. And so I think the public, having a public comment period is vital in order to help Missourians understand how exactly that initiative petition would affect them.
I asked about the time period because I don't want to put on a tinfoil hat, but you were in the Missouri House, and it is very common for the Speaker of the House to send a bill to committee on the last day of session, which means it will never actually see the light of day. And I could just imagine if You had been Secretary of State during the sports betting initiative. You may have just been like, you know, I think this needs like a year and a half of public comment, and it stretch it to like the last day to turn in signatures. I just want to be clear, you are not for something like that.
No, I'm not for something like that, whether it's an issue that I agree with or disagree with that. I think that, like I said, the public comment should probably be a minimum of 30 days and probably a maximum of 90 days. I mean, it does, you know, everybody's got their lives that they're living with, whether that's taking their kids to school and working a job and or two jobs or three jobs. And so it takes a while in order to get the publicity for, so everybody knows that, hey, there's a public comment period going on and just the campaign in order to get that done. And so that's why, you know, I think a minimum of 30 days or a maximum of 90 days would probably be, in my opinion, the best bet.
The final part I would like to talk about is a requirement that the full text of a statewide ballot measure be printed and available to voters at all election sites and polling places. Now, I understand not everybody has access to a computer. Some people, yes, have thrown their smartphones into the Missouri River because they're too addictive. But couldn't this be a rather wasteful and unnecessary thing when people could just get this information on your beautiful red-colored Secretary of State website?
That's right. Yes, and we most certainly will keep putting it on the Missouri Secretary of State website. But I think, in all truthfulness, that, you know, having a copy, and whether that's on a bulletin board or just taped to the wall so people can actually go up and read the full text of any initial petition, I think that helps with transparency. And so, you know, with the small amount of words that you can actually put on the ballot, having the availability of that full text, I know there's some election nerds like me that probably would go up and read all that.
So when this initiative goes before voters, because I'm not trying to like predict the future, but I fully expect this to pass out of the special session, whether it be through a filibuster squashing previous question or maybe Democrats just realize it's an inevitability and just let it pass. Do you think proponents are going to hone in on the fact that it's going to be significantly harder to amend the Constitution? Or are they going to focus on the items we just talked about, which are frankly less controversial and may seem more appealing to voters?
I think they'll probably focus on the whole package. I mean, yes, is it going to be harder to put something in the Missouri Constitution? Yes, it will be. Does it need to be? Most certainly. You know, Missouri has one of the easiest paths to get something in the Missouri Constitution out of any state in the Union. But the other things are reforms that need to happen to help protect election integrity here in the state, to help make sure that anything that passes and the signatures that are gathered, the process that goes into an initiative petition process, that people believe and trust in the process, that, hey, this is what the vast majority of Missourians want, and they believe and trust in the process. So I think it'll be a combination effort of a lot of different things. Obviously, with any ballot measure, there's some hot topic buttons, and there's some things that, you know, most people may be more passionate about than others.
I other proposals to make it harder to amend the Constitution have faltered badly in other states like Arkansas and Ohio. Why do you think this would find favor in Missouri, which, as we've kind of discussed in excruciating detail, is a place where voters seem to like left of center ballot initiatives?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of studies and surveys that have happened both for and against a ballot measure like this. And so I trust the process. I trust our legislative leaders. I trust Governor Kehoe as far as, you know, the wording and the timing of this special session regarding initial petition reform. And so I think the product that they put together is a good product. Will it be tweaked as it goes through the process? Most certainly.
That was Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins, who spoke with me on Wednesday about a proposal to substantially curtail the initiative petition process.
the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Alex Hoyer, Emily Woodbury, Danny Wisentowski, Maya Norfleet, and Elaine Cha. Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr. The politics editor is Fred Ehrlich.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.